please join me in a very large welcome to Don H. from Seal Beach, our main speaker tonight.
I'm Don, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's good to be sober and at a meeting at Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank Lee and Larry for your warm welcome and hospitality and dinner, and everybody's been so, you know, friendly, so I appreciate that. Also welcome David, our one newcomer, and I didn't identify for a long time when I was new, when I was going in and out. So I always figure there's probably, you know, one like me maybe out there, or maybe a couple of people who didn't identify. But I always like to say that, you know, you're welcome here. Keep coming back. And, you know, for me, I found that it works better when you let us get to know you. And that's what, you know, this deal really is about, is one alcoholic talking to another for the purpose of identification. And so, you know, that's kind of what, you know, I was taught to do. I want to make sure I got all the thank yous and everything out of the way here. It's important for me to remember that it's, you know, as they say, it's an honor and a privilege to, you know, speak in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I always feel like it's a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's my opinion. I've been sober since November 29, 1981. I was 26 years old, so I've spent, you know, most of my life in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's the best thing that ever. And, you know, Amanda, thank you for your talk. Yes, Alcoholics Anonymous, best thing that ever happened to me. My husband used to like to say, just the opportunity to get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous is the best deal you're ever going to get. And that's, you know, it's like a powerful statement. It's true. It's true for me. So, again, what I'm supposed to do, as I, you know, was told, is I'm supposed to share, you know, what my drinking was like, what happened as a result of it, and what happened to me, and, you know, what I've been like living sober for almost, you know, going on close to 44 years. So, I was talking with Larry, we're talking for dinner. I turned 70 in the end of June, and it's like, God, doesn't that number belong to somebody else? I mean, I was like, you know, but it, as a friend of mine says, you know what, you should be dead. And that is, you know, that's for all likelihood. I mean, if I happen to run into somebody who's still alive that, you know, was drinking when I was drinking, they don't look good. I mean, they look like, you know, they're about 90. So, I'm grateful for the life that I have because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I grew up in the Covina area, San Gabriel Valley. I'm the youngest of two. My parents had moved out here they followed my grandparents. They moved from the Detroit area in the early 50s, you know, and then I was born in 55. You know, I was the first person in my family born in California. And, we used to have those Sunday family dinners at my grandparents' house. And, you know, there'd be drinking, and sometimes there'd be, you know, the fighting and stuff like that would happen as a result of drinking. And, you know, so I was around alcohol. I was always, you know, it wasn't any big deal to me. And, you know, as far as, you know, the effects, you know, that alcohol could produce. And I was like a really quiet, shy kid. I never, bashful, as they used to say. And of course, in retrospect, I learned that, after I got sober, I learned that's really self-obsessed, And, I was like, that type of a kid and hard to, make friends in school and stuff like that. But I went to Catholic schools. I was in with a group of girls, and around about the seventh grade, we started one of my friend's dad had a keg on tap, and we started going over there after school and, hitting that keg. And what I found was that, I had that personality change. I could, we'd get on the phone, start calling boys and doing all those things that, on the natch, I wasn't going to be able to do. I totally identified with the, a doctor's opinion. I loved the effect produced by alcohol, and I loved that from the very start. And I just, I couldn't wait, to do it again. And, and of course, when you're young, you're not going to be drinking every day, but, we started, walking around town, and this is like the 60s, and, you could just go up to stand out in front of a liquor store, and, some guys would come by and, they'd buy alcohol. It wasn't like nobody, it wasn't no big deal. People didn't think, that they shouldn't be doing that so much. So, that's how it started. And, I was, that kid in high school that, hung out there across the street, smoking and, drinking, doing whatever was available. And I remember, and I went to like this regional high school. So people from different areas, went to that school, and I didn't really know any, there was a party when I was a freshman. I knew no one except for the person having the party. I got dropped off. That when I went through the door, I see this guy in the sailor uniform. So I immediately know that this guy can buy alcohol. So I just like make a beeline. And here I am, I'm like, again, I'm quiet, shy. I'm not, rather, introverted naturally. And, but I know this guy can get alcohol. So I, go directly to him, and we go directly to the liquor store. And, I remember we bought like Brew 102, those big, four bottles of beer, and I hid mine, my last bottle, I hid it in this car that was abandoned in the backyard of this broken down car, backyard of this place where the party was. And that's the last thing I remember is going for that. And then I came to in a bedroom with a dog trying to bite me. And I always think like my drinking really never got any more successful than that. The other thing that, became clear to me later on, of course, was that I was already hiding my, protecting my supply to make sure I got my share. I need to drink. And, it kind of went like that. And I met this guy that, he was about 5 years older than me. So now I'm like 17, 18, and, so he can get alcohol and take me to places, where I, can get in and stuff like that. And, which I thought was great. But, shortly he began to tell me that, that I had a drinking problem. And I thought, you're a drag. he used to always tell himself, like, sorry, doesn't get the job done. And You know, and I had other plans. You know, I thought, oh, we're going to get married and family and do this and that. And I remember him telling me, well, if we're going to get married, you need to get a better job, you know. And so, meanwhile, he had his own little secret life. He was a peeping Tom, for one thing. And he got caught peeping into somebody I worked with. His window. So, you know, now I'm like totally humiliated at work. I did break up with him. And, you know, I got another job. And, you know, I got hired in at the old Pacific Telephone and Telegraph back in 1978. And, you know, I got hired in as a 411 operator. And so, you know, it was like, you know, we had the books those days and stuff like that. And you'd work split shifts. So, you know, maybe you might work 7 a.m. to 11. Maybe you're off until 4 and come back and work until, you know, the rest 7 or whatever you get. Worked 7 and a half, got paid for 8. And so, of course, we go to the bar from, you know, at 11. And, you know, coming out and drink until, you know, you're coming out of there, sunlight hitting your eyes, trying to go back to work. And, God, I would give numbers. I mean, you know, they'd ask for the drive-in dairy. I'd give them the drive movie thing. And, I mean, in those days, I mean, it was like you could get the same person twice, you know, and they'd be screaming at you and stuff. And they had a deal where you could, if it was slow, they would, you know, you could take time off without pay, you know, just to leave. And if you had to sign up for it on a daily basis, which I did all the time. And the, you know, the joke was I was going to owe my union dues because I took so much of that. But I mean, I just had to get out of there. And, you know, so it went on. That became my life, that, you know, go to work and, you know, get off and go to the bar. And, you know, if things begin to happen that, you know, for instance, you know, I'm drinking, we close the bar, you know, I pass out, I come to, my friends are in the parking lot now, it's already, you know, it's like whatever after, you know, 2 o'clock. And, you know, so we continue to party out there. And, you know, I'll, of course, drive home. And, you know, I crashed my car in this, you know, it was kind of a, I don't know, weird curve in the freeway. But, you know, luckily for me, there was nobody. I was able to get my car started and get out of there. But what I say to myself at times like this now is, you know, that's a dangerous stretch of highway. And you just need to find an alternate route. Or if anybody, you know, points out that Dawn has a drinking problem, or, you know, so-and-so said you drink too much or whatever, I get away from them because I don't, you know, I can't have that. I can't have anybody looking at, you know, drawing attention to me. And so I'm working at that job, as I said, at the telephone operator. And my supervisor, unbeknownst to me, and I'd only been working there maybe like 6 months, she, you know, pulls me aside, calls me into a conference room and says, you know, she wants to talk to me. And she begins to, first of all, she told me, I see you coming in here green, because, you know, now I've got the hangovers, but, you know, I'm trying to get work and stuff. And she told me her story and she and how she got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. She had a year of sobriety at the time. And, you know, I remember, like, just keeping my head down. I just couldn't really meet her glance. And she asked me if I would go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with her. And you know, I did not want to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't want to, you know, I wanted to keep that job. And, you know, I was 23 years old. So we went to this meeting, and it was, a podium participation. It was on a Friday night in La Crescenta, if anybody, doesn't matter where it was. But anyway, you know, so people are getting up to the podium like we do, and they're sharing for 2 and 3 minutes about their, you know, drinking. And, you know, I'm just like horrified thinking, don't these people know any better than to keep that stuff to themselves? You know, I wasn't, there's no way, you know. I mean, there was a fight in our house. My mom ran around, shut the window. She was like, don't, you know, tell what goes on in the house. And, you know, but, you know, later on I could say that I was able to identify with, you know, some of the things they did and how, you know, they felt and those type of things. And but as we drove home from that meeting, drove to her house because I, you know, met her over there, you know, she's telling me, oh yeah, you know, all the things, you know, she's really kind of really trying to sell AA to me, if, as it seemed to me. And you know, I remember saying, we have dances, and I'm thinking, oh, I'll bet you have dances, you know, because I mean, I was 23, and everybody looked to be at least 45, which, you know, you're that age. And I was just picturing like square dances or something. I mean, I didn't know, you know, I mean, but of course, I'm just doing that nodding. And, you know, we get back to her place, and I just get in my car, digging through the ashtray, and I go to the liquor store. And now I got to get away from her, so that's what I do. And I transfer. Now I go to work downtown LA, which was perfect because, and this is before downsizing, you know, so you got big corporation and, you know, lots of people. So you could easily get lost in the shuffle. And, you know, I'd go to lunch and, you know, there's lots of bars down there. And sometimes I come back, sometimes I don't. And, or, you know, I mean, I just, and, you know, I can remember, you know, coming out of bars like at 5 o'clock at night or whatever it was. And, you know, it's like, I don't know, it was just be like a sea of people just going where they're in. And I'm just like lost in the headlights. And, you know, I don't know, did I drive? Where did I put the car? You know, what this, that, all those things. And, you know, same thing. You know, I'm living now in this apartment that is, I wasn't even in there legally. Somebody kind of like sublet it to me, and then, so, you know, I was hiding out from the landlord, and, you know, I'm just drinking in there, and, but I, you know, I would go to work, because I was like the one, you know, hold on reality, I think, that I had, and, you know, I didn't know, like, you know, I did all that peeking out of the windows, and then go dump your bottles and cans. And, you know, I had a standing water in the shower now, like, but that's just too much trouble. It interferes with my drinking, so I can't deal with fixing that. And there's no sheets on the bed anymore because, again, it's just too much trouble. And this is the way I'm living. Now, I was not raised to live like that. And, you know, things were, you know, just circling. And not, you know, right around that time, I had, was drinking down in Palm Springs with a friend of mine, and I met this guy. I mean, we like swam by each other in the pool, and he was from Australia. And, you know, I don't know, we took him around, you know, went back to LA, took him bar hopping, and my friend and her boyfriend, and he was staying at the Cecil Hotel. And people know the story of the Cecil Hotel, was, you know, but he was so we dropped him off at the airport to go back to Australia, and this guy starts writing to me. And I'm thinking, you know, I mean, this is, and I mean, this sounds old, right? Because there was no email. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm drunk living in this place that I just described. You know, I guess I was right back. I don't know. But occasionally call or whatever. And he's telling me he wants me to come over there. I don't have any money. So he sends me a ticket. Bottom line, I go to Australia. I'm going to go to Australia. Now, I say to my friend, do you remember what he looks like? And she goes, oh, yeah, he was cute. She goes, well, ask him to send you a picture. I go, well, that's a good idea. So he sent me a little bust shot, like, you know, those little pictures. And not a bad looking guy. And, so anyways, I get over there, and this guy was like this tall. I was self-conscious about many things, and my height was, of course, one of them. And, you know, so I'm just like, ugh, you gotta be kidding me. How did this happen? And, but, you know, and then the worst, but worse than that, he said to me, well, I don't really like to drink that much. I thought, oh, this is bad, you know? And I mean, you know, it was not, and I don't know, I was basically stuck over there for a while. And, you know, then I on my way back, I remember, I don't know, it's not even important, but, you know, I got, anyway, I met this guy from France on the plane back. He was getting us, he was going into the business section, business class, and getting us cognac. And I thought, this guy is pretty good. And, but anyway, I got, you know, detained in customs. And I lost track of him. So, but you know, and I came back home, and, you know, I just knew, there's a deep down in me, I just knew, you know, something wasn't really right with me, you know. And I, you know, I try to just, you know, I control myself and just, you know, which was, you know, just drinking at home is you know, how I, you know, was my solution to try to enjoy and control my drinking. And, you know, and it, you know, if you do that, at least for me, I drink and I think. And it's never good, you know, I'm like the big loser and all that, and but it's everybody else's fault and all those things. And in one of those pitiful, you know, incomprehensible drunks, I called that woman that had 12-step me, you know, initially taking me to that I worked for, had worked for. And, you know, I started calling her. And sometimes if I called drunk, she'd hang up on me. But she had, you know, let me take you to a meeting. So, okay, I would go. And sometimes I wasn't even sober when I would go. But, you know, then sometimes I was. And, you know, I can remember, like, the old timers saying, are you new? And I would say, sort of. I was just like a horrible, horrible attitude, you know, but they would laugh. You know, they were always happy to see me. Why, you know, I don't know, but that's how we are. But, and, you know, and I did, like, for I had a good 6 months just going, you know, put in a few, you know, days or so together, and then I'd drink again. And I just was fighting the idea of being an alcoholic. You know, I compared myself to other people, you know, other people in my family who died of alcoholism or something like that, you know, and which doesn't make a lot of sense, but, you know, that's what I was doing. And finally, November, I think I was maybe gonna have like 30 days or something like that, but it was right around, well, it was the Thanksgiving weekend, and you know, I was going to be with my parents and my family. And I always felt like I didn't even fit in my own family. And that feeling, you know, that separate and apart from, of course, kicked in. And, you know, I'd say this for the benefit of new people, like, people give you their phone numbers and we sincerely want you to call us. But most in my experience don't call. And I was one of them. I didn't call. I had numbers, that stack of cards. And what I told myself was, you can't bother those good people on a holiday, you know, which, you know, I probably knew was bogus. But, you know, I drank. I took, you know, I had some Xanax. I took those and I drank scotch I found. And my intention really was to end it, but I didn't, of course, because, you know, I just thought, AA is not going to work for me. You know, I'm miserable. You know, I just wanted to die. But alas, I came to the next day, and, you know, I had that moment of clarity where, you know, I thought, I really don't want to die. I just wanted to feel better. And I called that woman again and I asked her, would you take me to a meeting? And of course she was happy. I don't know why, because I was a miserable person, but she was happy to, you know, hear from me and said, of course. And I started to go back, you know, to meetings. And the difference that time for me was that I wasn't sitting back there in the back of the room taking anybody's inventory. Now I was beat down. I was, you know, more like just like a sponge, you know, just sat there. And I remember I got 30 days. This woman was, I don't know if some of you I know, the guy with 49 years remembers Dottie Harris. And she's now dead, but she had this silly giggle. And when, you know, she talked quite a bit in those days, and she was giving her talk and she was giggling like that. And I started laughing and I thought, oh my God, I'm being brainwashed, because I was like, you know, I was laughing. But I thought, I feel better. And I had not felt better and I felt good in a long time. And slowly I started to get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. And by that I mean taking commitments and, you know, doing what's suggested, got a sponsor, work the steps, try to, you know, start to stick my hand out and, you know, work with other people. And, you know, in those days there was 12-step calls and stuff like that. And just start to do the deal. And slowly, for me, you know, I began to feel a part of this deal. Because, we are a part of something bigger than ourselves. And, you know, I can remember, you know, right before I took a year, and I thought, I went to this little woman's meeting and they gave me the key to the door. I opened up the door. I bought the birthday cake, you know, when it was people's birthdays and whatever else I did, I don't know. But I was so impressed that, you know, that they trusted me to do those things. And, you know, that was how it began for me. I got sober in my early sobriety was in Pomona, the Triangle Club. Nice. And John and Alberta Keefe, who both passed now, but they died with like almost 60 years of sobriety. And, you know, they're just great examples. You know, they would, they got sober in the 50s and they, late 50, I guess, they would just walk around the room, you know, and shake everybody's hand and tell new people, like, oh, you're looking better. And I'd be thinking, no, they're not. But I knew, you know, I learned from them. You know, they were like crazy people. We did lots of fun things and they had parties and all this stuff. But they were serious about sobriety and, you know, being there for the newcomer and, you know, opening up their house and, you know, just all those kinds of things. And so that's where I kind of got my foundation. And, you know, I you can't help but if you, my experience is if you, you know, do Alcoholics Anonymous, you get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, you it's going to spill over into the rest of your life. You know, I learned how to grow up here. You know, I learned how to be accountable, to be where I said I'm going to be when I say I'm going to be there. And, you know, to think about somebody else and get out of myself and do things for other people for fun and for free. And, you know, I was, you know, retained that job, but, you know, I don't even know how long I was sober. And my supervisor came up to me and said, you know, my boss has been watching you. He likes the way you work and we want to promote you. And I thought, oh, my God, I ran into the break room. I called my sponsor and I said, they want to, I can't do that. She goes, yes, you can. She goes, you just do it like you do Alcoholics Anonymous, a day at a time, and we're all here to support you. And, you know, I was able to retire from that company. I had enough, you know, time. I had held responsible positions. I drove a company car at one point. And, you know, that is Alcoholics Anonymous. That's working in my life. And, you know, both of my, I was able to be present and helpful for my parents, you know, to make those living amends. My mom was sick for many years. And when she, you know, was dying, my sister, my brother and myself were in the hospital room that night. And my brother turned to me and he said, I want to thank you for everything you've done for Mom. He goes, I really appreciate it. I know she did too. And, you know, that was like, I mean, 20 years in. I mean, that was like, wow. But again, I don't take credit. I mean, that's Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, what Alcoholics Anonymous has done in my life. And, you know, I went to, I met my husband in Alcoholics Anonymous. We, you know, I was the secretary of a Friday night speaker meeting, and he strode in the door. He had just moved there from someplace else, and, you know, he proceeded to tell me how they did it, where he, you know, came from, and I was like, you know. But we became friends, and then, you know, years later, we started to date, and we got married. And, you know, we were married for, we were together 27 years, and married for, I guess, 23. And, you know, we had a really good life, you know, with AA at the center of it. He got, you know, he had cancer, and which he battled, you know, for many years. And then he died in February of 2023. And, you know, that night, and my sponsor drove me to the hospital, and she said, did you pray? And I said, I asked God to walk in here with me. And, you know, I was able to walk through that and do what I needed to do. It was, you know, probably the hardest thing, you know, that I've had to walk through in my sobriety. But, you know, because of Alcoholics Anonymous and these steps, you know, I have a relationship with a power greater than myself that I can rely on. I, you know, and I have the fellowship. And I was I was really terrified that I might just get like stuck, you know, and then maybe just like just sit home or something, or not be able to, you know, go about life. But you know, if you, it's like we just learn to put one foot in front of the other, and you know, if you have commitments, you know, I know how to go do my commitment. I have responsibilities to other people here, and I have to, you know, be available and accountable to them. And, you know, I just keep moving, and, you know, a day at a time, you can stay sober with a broken heart. I learned that. And, I mean, what I've learned here is life on life's terms. We get to live life on life's terms, not on our terms. Because my terms was always, the hell with it, I'll take a drink or, you know, whatever. And, it's not the way it is today. It's strictly because of Alcoholics Anonymous working in my life. I'm going to kind of wrap it up a little bit early. So thank you for having me, and thanks.
One more round of applause for Don. Thank you so much.